This is Live from the Table, a Comedy Cellar affiliated podcast coming at you on Sirius XM 99 Raw Dog and the Laugh Button Podcast Network. My sound is all messed up.
I like the way it sounds.
Okay. No, but in my ears, it's all messed up.
That's your self-esteem.
Anyway, we're waiting. Well, that's messed up too.
Now you're messing up my sound.
You're loud. Oh, brother.
Hello? Hello?
Now I can't hear anything.
Oh my God. It's like doing a podcast
with
Burns and Allen.
Okay.
Should we start over?
No, I like it. Go ahead.
Okay. So we're waiting on Josh Johnson, who is, I haven't seen him in a while. Where's he been?
I don't know. You'll ask him when
you
get there.
Okay. I guess I'll ask him when I get here. I haven't seen him in a while, but he'll be here. But we do have with us Noam Dorman, the owner, the proprietor of the world famous Comedy Cellar, the arguably greatest comedy club in America, in the world, perhaps. It's been called that, and I don't think that's...
So you guys want to hear something that's fun? I'm just reading about this now. So, you know, it's great to live in the 21st century. So, you know, there's this Fox News lawsuit. We talked about it last week with Ilya Shapiro. And don't confuse my opinion. I'm not defending the duplicitousness of Fox News and you know, whatever was going on, but there's larger principles. Just like when you defend the Nazis' right to march, it doesn't mean you're defending the Nazis, you're defending certain principles. So I had this theory about why I thought Fox shouldn't lose the case based on what I know. I'm like, well, why is nobody saying this? Why? And we had Ilya on last week, and I didn't really get a clear answer from him either, like where I was going wrong. So I looked up the law firm that defends Fox.
Yeah.
And I found the lead counsel. I said, fuck it. I'm just going to email this guy what I think. So when I put a mail tracker on it, you know, you can do this where you can track who opens your email or not. So I just sent this email out to this guy. It's two paragraphs to this guy. I don't want to say the law firm, but it's public information. But I sent it to him. And then, lo and behold, this email was opened 6 times over a 5-hour period yesterday. Implying that maybe it was sent, forwarded, or maybe he opened it 6 times, but whatever it is, somebody looked at this email 6 times yesterday. Now, I don't know.
Are you
maybe
you
they
say,
get a load of this.
let me
read that dumb email again. Can you believe this? I mean, I don't know what that means.
Well, what did you say in the email?
I'm not going to go into that. But the point is that, like, not that long ago, that kind of interjection into a national thing, it was just like you could just sit at your desk and say, let me see who's this line, and just boom, you just send him an email, and then you can check that he read it, and you can follow the email too. Anyway, so that you know, I live for these things.
I know, you're so excited.
Well, maybe you'll change the case. I didn't introduce, of course, Periella, our producer.
Thank you. Here I am.
And producer, so that's what she is. She's a producer.
And then another thing happened. So do you remember when we had Benjamin Wittes on? And he looked down the end of his nose with his glasses at us when I was saying I thought Ukraine was more likely responsible for the bombing of the Nord pipeline.
Right.
It's like, no, only a major state could synchronize a high-tech operation. Like, well, why would Russia bomb its own pipeline when Ukraine would want the pipeline? Remember I said, well, you don't understand international relations. All right. I'm not being totally fair to him, but I'm not being unfair.
Right.
And sure enough, in the New York Times yesterday, all the intelligence believes now that it was a Ukraine-oriented group that bombed the pipeline.
You like those clips I sent you, huh?
Oh, yeah. And the same thing with that with that dumbass Will Wilkinson, to look at clips, where he was like, yeah, COVID can easily be stopped if we just blah, 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 blah. And that didn't work out so well either.
Well, maybe you should have more confidence in yourself. And maybe some of these experts we invite on are not so expert.
Well, I didn't mention the ones I was wrong about then.
Okay. Did you all do your homework assignment? It wasn't an officially a homework assignment, but I suggested strongly so that everybody watch Chappelle's special.
You mean Chris Rock's?
Chris Rock special. but you can also watch Chappelle's special.
Cut. Edit that out. Edit that out. Comedian, racist comedian, Dan Natterman.
Well, you could look at it that way. You could just look at it that those are the two biggest acts
right now. Why would anybody look at it that way?
Okay. Yeah. But anyway, I suggested that.
I did watch it. I watched the last 20 minutes of it.
I watched the first 40 minutes of it.
Selective Outrage is what it's called. It tops Netflix top 10.
I sampled the first part. I was in a hurry, but I'd heard those jokes most of them
workshop here.
Yeah, workshop there. But the last 20 minutes is, for, by all accounts, is when he got truly intense. And absolutely, it's true. I mean, you see it in his face. That's not method acting. I mean, he was really feeling the emotion of what he was saying. I found it very powerful.
When he was talking about Will Smith, a slap heard around the world.
Yeah. Also the part about his mother having to have her tooth removed by a vet.
In the old days, when a black woman couldn't go to a white dentist.
When a black woman couldn't go to a white dentist, and all the progress, I mean, he didn't say the word progress, but that's the implication of now his daughter is sipping, you know, coffee in culinary school in Paris, and his mother flies out to meet her every so mm-hmm. often. I found that extremely moving. And whether he meant it to be or not, I'm sure he has ambivalence about it. In a certain way, one can't deny it was a positive note about America, even if at the same time it's highlighting a negative thing about America. You know, that kind of progress in one person's lifetime is astounding and maybe unprecedented in the history of any country. Not that I'm any kind of expert in world history, but it's probably unprecedented in any country in the world.
Periel, thoughts? Is there a new GOAT? Can we declare Chris Rock the GOAT of stand-up?
Was Chappelle previously the GOAT?
Well, I don't think there's such a thing as a GOAT, quite honestly. I think it's just a silly notion because there's so many different comedians doing so many different kinds of things.
No, I'm not going to declare anybody the GOAT, but...
It could, you know, I think there's many comedians that are very, very good, but, you know, people have said that.
But one has to give Chris... these props, he didn't talk about it for a year or very little. He orchestrated, or it turned out that way, and maybe it wasn't orchestrated, a very, very powerful, I mean, a live thing on Netflix, holding it off until then. I mean, the whole world is talking about this.
Right.
In a way, they wouldn't have been if it hadn't been a live show. I saw some dumb reviews, like, why did it have to be live? But it's very powerful that it's live. Because a live event.
Did you see it live? I didn't see it live.
No.
I watched part of it live. I thought that the way that he handled this was really impressive and kind of brilliant. That there was a part in the special where he said, everybody's a victim now, right? Like, but there are all these people with like paper cuts, I think, that saying, oh, I'm a victim. And he really took this and he really flipped it in like the best way possible, especially for, you know, a comic or him specifically.
Yeah, I thought the whole thing was pretty fucking impressive, including the fact that the whole world is without, beyond the performance, the strategy of the whole thing, and that it all came together and it all worked, is pretty impressive. Like you can't lay a glove on this guy. This is flawless execution.
Well, yeah. He was told to keep Will Smith's wife's name out of his mouth, which he did not do during the special. So I don't know that there will be any repercussions. I suspect.
Oh yeah, and when he was calling Will Smith a bitch, that was intense.
You call him a bitch?
Did you watch this?
Yeah, I watched it.
He called him a bitch like 6 or 7 times.
Okay, all right.
Well, he's saying that people called him a bitch.
He was talking about all the other people that were calling him.
Yeah, but by the way he was doing it, was obviously that he was calling. Like, right. He was like, I'm not, and he called you a bitch. Like, it was.
And then he said what everybody has been saying for a year is that, but he hit me because I'm small. Because I'm smaller than he is, which is what people have been saying all year.
He says you know, that he, Will Smith played Muhammad Ali. You may find it shock. I didn't even audition for that part.
Josh Johnson. I barely recognize.
Well, let's get Josh's take on Josh
Well,
Johnson,
first let me introduce Josh, I guess.
Hurry, because I have to go. Go ahead.
I got to go on a date in college, which was big for me. I want to go on, you know. I don't get to go on a lot of dates because I don't know how to talk to people. But the date was good. Went to dinner and then went to a movie. And then we went back to my place, okay? And guys, I'm gonna go there with you, okay? I'm gonna get a little nasty, all right? We were kissing, okay? We were kissing, all right? But then in the middle of kissing, she told me that she wanted me to choke her. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I have arthritis in my hands. So I couldn't talk up how I was about to choke her. I'm about to choke her. She's about to find out about me, you know? So I was trying to talk up how bad I was going to choke her, make her feel like she was still into it, you know? So I was like, baby, I'm going to choke you, all right? Because that's what you want, because that's what you need. But it will feel like a turtleneck. There's nothing I can do about it. No, baby, you're going to get choked. You have to be choked. It's choking time, okay? I'm even shake your head and scream in your face while I choke you. But you will feel safe the entire time. You will feel totally safe. There's nothing I can do about that.
Well, Josh Johnson is apparently a big deal. He's a stand-up. I mean, I know him from here, but he's an Emmy-nominated writer, performer, NAACP award winner from Louisiana by way of Chicago, currently writing on The Daily Show. Comedy Central's most watched comedian ever with 40 million views to date across their platforms. His new special, Up Here Killing Myself.
All right, before we go crazy.
Available on Peacock, that's the intro.
He has the same bio as Paul Mercurio, except Paul Mercurio did win the Emmy. So,
okay. Well, I don't think. And he looks. The last I saw Josh Johnson.
I try not to think about the Emmy. This is.
If we may talk, before we get into Chris Rock, if we may, the last time I saw Josh Johnson, he looked completely different. And I don't. Yeah. I'm not sure I would recognize him.
His hair is here.
A lot of people did not. Yeah. It was.
I recognize his voice.
Yeah, deeply hurtful. To the idea, because when you think about it, it's like I had an afro, and then I had my hair braided. So it's not like I had a beard. So it was still my whole face.
Yeah,
still out.
I don't think you looked that different.
But then everyone, no one recognized me.
As white people and black people?
Everybody were like, Oh, it's you. I was like, oh, jeez. Oh,
it took
God.
Me a second.
I clearly haven't been making
an
impression.
Well, I knew it was you because you're the guest today and you walked in.
Yeah.
But had, so I figured, well, that's got to be Josh Johnson.
Yeah, but if we were downstairs.
I would have said, I wouldn't, may not have recognized. Quite possible I would have
Seems
said.
Seems like a nice guy.
Hey,
talks
Dan.
A lot like Josh Johnson.
Well, as soon as you open your mouth, I would know it was Josh Johnson.
Okay,
because your voice is exceedingly distinct.
I think there's something about the way the mind works that it files things in ways to make it easy to recall. So if you've got a big afro, then that just becomes like the shorthand for Josh Johnson, you know?
Yeah.
And then, but you don't just have a big afro, you also don't have like a huge nose or a scar or other than that, your face is pretty.
I've been called
mild, you know,
this one. I didn't even know how I feel about it for quite a while. My buddy called me an artist rendering of a black person. And I was like, jeez. And I don't know. So many people didn't recognize me that I don't know if I can say he was wrong.
I recognize.
By the way, I don't know, much like with Jews, I don't know that you're supposed to talk about noses and black people. As with Jews,
I wasn't talking about black people's noses. I'm saying you don't have a huge
nose
or a scar.
If you had stopped at nose, it would have been weird. If you had just been a big nose. Anyway, what else is going on?
Just to be clear, I didn't in the slightly mean it as a classic black feature.
I just meant...
Like things that, like I said, a thing that somebody could have on their face, which would replace the afro in terms of something you remember.
No, you were just listing things.
Yeah.
Well, that's fair enough, but I'm just saying that's how I, if you're talking about a Jewish person and talking about their nose, I would say, ooh, easy does it.
Yeah, but black people, to be fair, black people aren't even known for big noses. They're known for like flatter noses, right?
Yeah, like, wide
noses.
Wide. But wide is a form of big, I think.
No. Anyway, so this is very important. So because I have to go, I won't rewind the whole thing. But I just said some very positive things about Chris Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Not just about the way he performed, but also for the execution that culminated in this basically worldwide event and attention with the live. I mean, I could not be more impressed with the way he pulled this off. I don't know what your thoughts are on the whole
thing. I think that it was very smart not to say anything right away, because then you don't want to say anything that it's already a situation where so many people are split so many different ways that you don't want to say anything quickly that's going to like solidify someone's opinion of how it happened. and people actually want to get your take. And I think withholding that take until you had a forum to say it that you also want to bring people to is the best possible. It's honestly like there are very few people who are in comedy, at least, they're incredibly good at promotion and making an event and then delivering on that event. And I feel like this was one of those times.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that, you know, for all of his like faults, insanity, all the stuff that's wrong with him, what like Kanye did with Donda was kind of like that. It's like, okay, everyone knows that my mental illness spiked when I lost my mom. This next album is not only dedicated to my mom, it's supposed to be like this whole like culmination of everything my mom and I went through, and it's about her, it's named after her. It's like it's and I'm getting all my friends on it, so it's got all these features, and then we're going to do listening parties, and we're going to do listening parties in arenas, so then you, the audience, get to decide what's going to end up on the final album. And it just became this whole huge thing.
Right.
And I think Chris did a version of that with The Slap, where it's like, you know, as a comic, you have to test stuff out. So he knew versions of jokes he might do about it were going to leak. And it was all just enough to keep people talking. And it was all just enough to like win people over more to what he might say. Because he said the I'm not a victim thing really early.
Right, right. Yeah.
You know, so I think he had that on lock as far as like when you think of a special in recent years and you think of something around it to promote it. There's been nothing like.
Noam, did you say you heard some of the Will Smith stuff workshopped here, or was that all kind of
a little bit? I don't remember specifically what I heard. He did talk a little bit about it here, but he never got intense.
Yeah, yeah.
That was really something. That was powerful. Yeah. In my opinion, that emotion was all real.
I think it was real. Yeah. Yeah, I think it was very real. You know,
like I wonder, even did he plan to throw the mic at the end, or was that just the way he felt?
I think it could be both. I think that he is now, I think it's been three specials where he's like mic dropped at the end, this one included.
He didn't just drop it, he threw it.
No, I'm with you. I think he knew he was going to like do something with the mic at the end, but yeah, maybe throwing it was like, all right, this is like spur of the moment. Does that make sense?
Because yeah.
Tambourine, he just like, you know, flicks it out of his hand and walks away. But in this one, wow, I was like, oh, wow.
It was pretty riveting. I'm really, really impressed with Chris Rock today.
I really like what you said about like getting all of your friends on it to like the comparison to Donda, because it's true. And even when I did watch it live, the first half of it, and when Ronnie Chang was saying, every comedian's here who's ever owed Netflix a favor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all of Chris Rock's like friends, and everybody had such beautiful things to say about him as they're, you know, they were opening for him, and it was really nice like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, Josh, I'm having dinner tonight at an event with a baroness. I can't talk about it.
You can talk about
a baroness, and I got invited to this, and I'm not gonna lie and say I got invited just this week, but I never reconciled my calendar, and I realized that it was this week, and then I saw you were the guest, and you know, you're one of my favorite people and one of my favorite guests ever. I'm like, oh fuck, Josh.
Oh,
he's gonna be insulted that
no,
in some way I didn't think he was important enough to. But I would have actually canceled the podcast if I. But anyway, so that's it. So we made it a half an hour earlier so I could spend some time with you. But I'm not gonna be able to stay. No, but we'll have you on again.
Yeah,
if you want to have it, me. But anyway, yeah,
who's this baroness?
No, it's all good.
The baroness. I don't want to take time away from Josh.
Yeah, let's hear about your special. Forget Chris Rock.
Oh yeah.
We got plenty of time. With
yeah, right up there with Chris Rock. Yeah, so my special came out on Peacock a couple weeks ago, and it is a split. I turned to some interstitials at certain points because the hour that I did came from an hour of talk therapy that I then sort of pulled everything out of it that was funny, and then, you know, wrote the bits to it and then made the show. So then you'll see sort of in chunks, the section will start with me in therapy either being asked a question or like talking about something where I'm not really sure how I feel, and ending up on stage where not only do I know how I feel now, but I actually have a joke and a way to sum up the entire idea. And So yeah, that's the basic gist of it.
Now there's an entrepreneurial aspect to it, which is you shot it yourself.
Yeah,
you with took the financial risk.
Yeah, yeah. So I went to Jacob Anachi, who directed it, and yeah, we came up with a budget together and everything, and yeah, it's oof.
That's
yeah.
Scary.
No, it's terrifying. Yeah.
And wait, so you're part of this is you in therapy?
Yeah,
with an actual therapist or with like somebody that with
no, it's Todd been recreated. No, it's been recreated. It was not my actual therapy session because I think that would,
but it's based
would have been sad. Yeah, yeah.
Now, what is the demographic profile of your therapist, if you don't mind me asking?
So I've had many therapists, and so this is the representation of me going to a white woman. This is my thing whether it's like physical or mental, right? I personally. Like, and it's not the need, you know, if something happens, like if I get hit by a car, I'll see any doctor, whatever. But if I'm just going for the sake of going, I do like to go to a black doctor. And if I can't get a black doctor, I like to go to a woman. The reasons for that is that I don't know if you've heard about this in medicine, but there was a long held belief that black people just felt less pain and like all this other stuff. So it's like at least a black doctor will be like, oh, I know what this is like when you're complaining to me about
something.
Well,
a doctor, you know? It's an intimate thing to be with a doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I could understand why you'd want to be with somebody that you might feel a little closer to. And
yeah,
and a therapist in particular.
Yeah.
Because a therapist knows your life better, you know. And
yeah,
also,
yeah.
You know, I've seen Jewish therapists. I would be, you know, what if I had an issue with that was stereotypical? Like, say I'm arguing with my boss about money, and I want to talk about that in therapy.
Well, I was gonna
I would feel odd saying that to a non-Jewish therapist, because I'd be, in my mind, he's thinking, oh, these people.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
no,
as a black man going to a black therapist,
would,
like, I would think would be a lot better.
Do you prefer a black man or a black woman for a therapist specifically?
I do find that just in my life, black women tend to be right.
Mm.
So yeah, black woman helps the most, but when it is, if it's just women in general, like physical or mental, I do find that the same way that there was the black thing of you know, not feeling pain or not being taken seriously or whatever, I think women also have that as well. So it's like when it's black woman, it's double fold. But like, for instance, I went to a doctor I had to get an injury checked out, and she walked in and it was a pregnant white woman. And I was like, thank God. All right. You're going through a whole bunch of stuff that like now all my pain seems valid.
So your current therapist is a white woman?
My last therapist was.
And your current?
My current, I'm out of therapy right now. I'm in between therapists.
I went to I have a black urologist who performed my vasectomy.
Yeah.
And apparently he thinks that white men can't feel pain, but is he putting that to the test?
Yeah. Oh God. But,
no, he was great. But I would say just about the therapy, if I were you, like I have no right to this opinion maybe, but just I would want to go see a black woman. And this is my thought process.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to go see a white person, let alone a white woman, because if I want somebody to call me on my bullshit, and let's say, you know, part of that bullshit is, you know, I thought this was racist or whatever, you know, no white therapist is going to dare question you, you know.
Sure,
they're just going to be so afraid, you know, especially in today's climate. So you just like to remove that thing so that if somebody thinks that, you know, you just... What if you look at it this way or whatever it is? You only a black person would have feel the total freedom to say that to you. And a woman, because a lot of things that you might be talking about might have to do with the opposite sex.
Sure.
And I would always prefer to have a female therapist who understood what it is that the opposite sex is thinking.
Yeah.
Than another dumb dude like me. Who's like,
no, I feel you.
That bitch is out of her mind.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
I think that I would go see a woman therapist. But the question is, how would I feel about going seeing a black woman therapist? Would I think that would be an issue? I think it wouldn't be. I don't think it works the opposite way. I don't think it matters so much.
Is there anything you're uncomfortable or were uncomfortable talking to your white therapist about? Like maybe I shouldn't talk about this in front of white folk kind of thing.
Not really, because I feel like this is the thing, I guess, is that a lot of white people, especially when you're in a white country, tend to take all of their knowledge and be very academic with it.
Yeah.
You know? So not saying that there's no human element added to their therapy and how they work with patients, but they can be very direct because by and large, potentially, you know, you talk about like 77% of the country or whatever is white, a lot of the people will already have that shared experience built in, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so then there wasn't anything that I was like particularly uncomfortable with because I was like, all right, let me just see if there's anything like wrong with me. So then I just lay it all out there. And then when you find out, sometimes you're disappointed to find out there's nothing wrong. Like sometimes you're like, because it means that you're not as you're in your thoughts unique as you thought you were, right? So there's some sort of solace.
But what brought you there if there was, you know, I mean...
Oh, no, just was... being told that there were certain things I was feeling that were normal or being told that there was like a way that I looked at things that was actually how most people look at it. You know what I mean? Getting that.
But what brought you to the therapist in the first place, I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just think, okay, I think that in the world, there's problems, right? And if you aren't careful, your problems become everyone else's problem or your problems become a deeper problem for you.
Right.
And there's enough problems that we can't do anything about that I was like, I don't want to do anything extra. And so then that was the initial thing. But like, luckily, I grew up in a family that this is like not necessarily indicative of. Like, it's just not as common in a lot of black families. But my family always believed in therapy. And so they basically, even when I was a kid, I went to a therapist for a little while, which is one of the things that encouraged me to go to a therapist later in life on my own, you know, because it didn't seem stigmatized or weird to me.
But you were probably always a kind of sensitive, very smart kid, almost like the profile of a kid who goes to therapy. Like,
yeah, like yeah, just not, you're not wrong.
No,
yeah,
just fucked up.
Yeah,
why? No, no, because he's obviously gifted in some way. And
I'm with you. I was exactly that thing. Because even when I went to therapy, I was like, ah, man, I think like there were certain I've been to a couple therapists where I was like, ah, man, I really could have sat down, had a good think and missed this whole thing. You know what I mean? Because like, especially when you've gone for a while and you like know some of your habits.
Do you love going to therapy?
Like, it depends.
It depends on the therapist.
Yeah. Because I actually look at going to therapy. This is just me personally. I look at therapy like going to the doctor. So I don't know if this is good or bad, but personally for me, I only go when I start to feel sick.
Right.
Just go for the sake of like, I'll just go 52 weeks out of the year. Yeah. I don't really go for maintenance.
I got to go. This is a fucking good conversation and I got to go.
No, we'll do it again.
But we'll do
well,
it again.
I just want to hear a little bit about the Baroness and why, you know, I think that's of some interest.
Let me read the invitation real quick.
You don't want to be the first one to show up either.
No, but I don't want to be. I want to be on time.
You want to be fashionably late.
Introduce our good friends, Baroness Philippa Stroud, David Stroud, Arthur Brooks. Philippa, a member of the British House of Lords, and David, a senior leader of Christ Church London, are founders of a former London-based network of senior leaders, exists to serve senior leaders, influencers, and blah, blah, blah.
There's a lot of mumbling going on.
Because it's long. Build bridges across traditional sectors, boundaries, create community to fight poverty. I don't know.
Why are you going to this thing?
I was invited.
But you get invited to things all the time. You usually say no.
No, I don't usually say the woman who's doing it is a good, very good friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, good friends doing it, and a baroness is going to be there. I don't know. I'd go.
Well, I don't know what baroness mean. What that means nowadays? You know, I hear you could buy like for $50, you send away, and you become like a lord in Scotland or something.
That's a land thing. That doesn't.
It's a land thing.
This is old money.
I hung out with a Princess Beatrice one night
from the Netherlands.
No, Beatrice, the redheaded one. She's related to the royal family in England. She came to the Olive Tree one night.
Beatrice? Isn't it? I don't know.
And she's like three removed. I don't know. And she was just like a normal person. So, you know, wasn't that big a deal.
I know. Okay, fine. Okay. Well, anyway, enjoy your dinner with the Baroness.
have a crumpet for me.
I mean, now that Prince Harry is talking about applying lotion to his dick and thinking about his mother. I mean,
right,
I,
yeah.
You don't have quite the same esteem for the royal family.
No, the sheen off these people is really...
Yeah, it's really brought them down a peg, yeah. You know? It was either going to be like an overall revolution or just Prince Harry's book. Like, right.
Hello, Baroness. I wonder if you'd like this vibrator.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody getting real familiar.
All right, thank you, Noam Dorman, having dinner with a baroness. That's why he's dressed up. I guess you're going with Juanita, I assume.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Good to see you. Yeah.
Lord, are they going to introduce you as
yeah.
you?
Afro
and yeah,
are they going to
yeah.
introduce you when you walk
Brand
in?
Brand new me.
When you walk in, are they going to introduce you? Presenting...
Bye.
Lord Noam and Countess. Well, anyway.
I always only wanted a gay therapist, a gay male therapist.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I...
And I think that Jackpot is a gay male black therapist.
I don't really? Know why that would be a jackpot.
Is it just from life experience plus being a therapist?
Yeah,
or like you're just, saying perspective plus
yes,
therapy?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like my OB, and this was not planned, but my OB when I was pregnant, obviously, mm-hmm. was a gay black guy. And I was...
But why does that make it... You felt that was superior
does,
choice?
Yeah, I do, actually. Because I think that there... I have had the experience on multiple occasions with, you know, straight male Jewish doctors, older white men. And there's something a little bit condescending.
Well, I don't think you need to go full on the opposite of that. How about just a woman doctor?
I've had horrible experiences with women doctors. I'm sorry. I've had great ones too, but mm-hmm. I feel like I'm
well,
going.
Right.
I'm going.
If that works for you. My main criteria is when I see their diploma on the wall, none of it is in Spanish.
Yeah. Why they're...
I don't want to see Universidades de Guatemala.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing. We now go to Mexico to get the stuff
right.
done because we don't have health insurance. So it's like those doctors are starting to look more appealing.
Well, they might be
appealing.
Good, but I still have my old world prejudices, and I want
to
see.
Because to them.
Because a lot of people go to med school. Now, if you're from there,
mm-hmm.
say you are from Mexico and yeah. or Guatemala, in this mm-hmm. case, is the case in my example, and you went to school in Guatemala, I guess that makes sense. But Americans, oftentimes when they can't get into any med school in America, mm-hmm. they will go to med school. Is it a little chilly in here, by the way?
Oh, I don't...
Oftentimes, we'll go to med school overseas. There's a med school in Granada, remember? There was like a war we fought over there because... Anyway...
So you're worried about Americans in other countries
Americans
getting their degrees.
Degrees in other countries. Because
back?
They couldn't get... Because a lot of times, they couldn't get into any med schools in the United States. So they
yeah,
went.
But it won't be valid when they come back, right?
I don't know how that works, but yeah, I think so.
No, I don't think that's right at all. I feel like I've had so many Uber drivers that used to be doctors.
Well, I don't know about
yeah,
that.
You can't
I'm pretty
medicine.
Sure you can. You have to take the boards and pass the boards, but
That's what it is. Yeah. So then the people you're talking about, if they try to come back and they already weren't good enough to get into med school here, a lot of times they don't pass the board.
Okay.
When they come back, so I feel like this system is working potentially.
I feel like if you can learn another language well enough,
no, these med schools are, I think, in English, geared toward taking Americans' money. I don't think these are these are med schools that are in Spanish or in whatever language. I think these are med schools that have an English program for Americans that want because they want our money.
It's absolutely cheating what he's talking about.
Okay.
Like now that you've explained it, I totally see what you mean. For a second, I thought you just meant like, man, if my doctor's from Spain and he was a doctor, this is all ooh.
Yeah,
no.
Well, I guess what I said could have been misconstrued.
Yeah, I realize now you're talking about Americans who already tried and did not.
Is that really a thing?
That's a thing. Sure, it's a thing.
No, it really is because I've known people who couldn't get into medical school and so they just kept trying medical schools until they got into one.
That's insane.
Rather than just learning more. Like so
right, rather than learning more.
Yeah, they're like, oh, okay, I couldn't get into this school, this school, this school, this school, this school, and just truly going down because especially if you come from a family of doctors, there's maybe either gonna be an inclination or expectation to become a doctor yourself.
Sure.
And so now if you whether you were partying or whether you just haven't picked the right type of medicine or whether you just don't have the interest, it's now time to apply and you either don't have the grades or you don't have the just the acumen overall. And now it's like, all right, what do I do? And then you try. Then you go overseas and try to learn something.
Josh, if we could get back to your special.
Oh, sure.
You don't hit the same topics as Chris Rock hitting his, well, maybe you do hit some of the same topics. Wokeness, of course, is a big topic these days.
Yeah.
I don't know if you hit that. What topics would you say some of the main ones that you hit are?
I talked about not growing up with money. I talked about relationship with my dad and everything, losing my dad. And then I talked about how I had a stalker. So it's like,
is a stalker recent?
Not anymore technically. So luckily by the time a little while after I did the show, it was really winding down, but yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. It was really rough.
It was a woman.
I don't know who it was, 'cause it was all happening like online, and it was someone who was like, basically they were threatening me for quite a while. And then they'd obviously make fake accounts because I was blocking the other.
Oh, that was a threat. It wasn't just like, I love you, I want to have your baby.
No, it was like, you're going to bleed. It's like, I'm going to come kill you.
And did they give a reason why they were angry at you?
I can't speak to their mental state, but all I know is they think that they're me. Mm-hmm. So then every time I had a thing happen and like posted about it, I think it like shattered that illusion. And then they were like, attacking me, but then they thought that they were, it was very weird, because then also the messages they would send didn't actually make sense. The only thing that was it like in any way intelligible was the threat. So it would be like a long thing, and it would be a bunch of things that didn't make any sense at all, like whatsoever. And then it would be like, but I'm gonna kill you. And it's like,
you don't have any idea
that sentence made sense.
You don't have any idea who this individual is. Did you go to the police? They weren't able to.
No, we went to the police, and yeah,
they weren't able to ascertain the identity of this individual.
Because even with the threats, they're like, I think the most they can do is collect them, but they can't, like, you know, we were sending screenshots to the police and stuff like that, but the most that they can do is just like, we'll make a note of it. But
you would, you would think there's a way to get an ISP address or something.
It wasn't that helpful, because then they ended up telling us, the person that we were talking to about it, because we were like, here's an account that looks like their main. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that initially they were like coming at me with until I finally blocked them. And so then they were obviously making ones, and it's like, if it's just been made and there's like a fake email attached to it, you're never going to find who this is, whatever. But the main one, they were like, oh, okay, this person is either in D.C. or Lagos. Oh. And I was like, that doesn't help at all. Oh, my gosh. And it was like, yeah, because they may have been using a VPN or something, because now VPNs are more popular. Okay. And like, so it's just by default, I think a lot of that stuff is harder to track down because more people are savvy to, like, maybe you bought a VPN because you want to watch Canadian Netflix because there's more stuff you like on it. But then it does end up helping you out if you want to be crazy.
I haven't seen you here in a while. Have you been busy with The Daily Show?
Doing a little bit of touring, yeah.
Oh, you've been on tour?
Yeah, so I've been on the road. I'm on the road all year, really. Next three weekends of the month. So I'm going to Kansas City this weekend and then South by Southwest.
Do you enjoy that?
I love it, yeah.
You love the road? Great. You're lucky. I envy people that love the road, because I can't do it. And I've sort of configured my career around one-nighters, where I go do a Jewish community center in Long Island, or I do a country club in New Jersey. I'm doing a fundraiser in Baltimore for a school district down there. So it's one night, and it pays pretty well. But the weekends at clubs, I can't. It's too much for me.
I never liked it.
Get lonely. I'm just, the cold hard reality is I don't like stand up. Please, somebody buy me out. I'll sell my whole act. I've said this before. My initial thought was that I'd, get a TV show or something.
Well, and I keep saying you might.
Like, do you want to act or do you want to write?
Yeah, one or the other.
Oh, one or the other? Okay.
Doing stand up, it's stressful. It stresses me out.
Sure, sure.
I find it very stressful.
Yeah. I don't get nervous the way I used to get nervous anymore, but I do find myself getting a little, like, getting Butterflies again. I think now it's just because I have to have a new hour because now I'm touring and stuff, and the special just came out, so then it's like not doing any of that stuff, and then luckily I was already building up the hour.
Also, I don't write that fast. Write that fast. I feel that's because my jokes are the way they. I don't want to make excuses, but there's only so many jokes about my cousin Sheila I can come up with. Jokes about, if you're familiar with my act, about shit that never happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Rather than just the new, matter of fact, I'm talking about the news of the day or the issues of the day, which I suppose if I had to come up with another hour, I would do that.
But you could also talk about
how many
yourself.
Jokes about my fucking ninth grade sex ed teacher using his real penis to demonstrate how to put on a condom? Can I come up with
that? But that's only because you talk about things that didn't happen. If you talked about things that did happen, it would be endless.
Right. Stylistically, it wouldn't be as consistent. And I do filter through my own lens, but stylistically, it wouldn't. I mean, Noam used to tell me, "Well, just do some jokes like that, and some jokes like that are more matter of fact." But stylistically, it would clash.
Yeah.
Like if Stephen Wright just went from "My school colors were clear" to "Hey, man, you know, it's crazy what's going on with Kanye." I mean, people are like, they wouldn't fit together.
Yeah, but I do think that you end up in a different space when you're pushed there versus wanting to go there on your own. So, like, if something happened one day where just for whatever reason you couldn't do any of the jokes that you wrote anymore,
I'd have to go in a different direction.
Yeah, but I think that you're more capable of doing it than feels comfortable. So then it is a slower process, if that makes sense. Like for me, I remember when I wrote my first hour, I didn't think I'd have another hour. And then, eventually, even if you don't have a special come out, even if you don't do an album, the thing that ends up making you have to write more is that finally, out of all the times you've done stand-up, a place that had you headline wants you to come back. So now it's like, yeah, maybe it's been a year and a half, but especially if people really liked you, they're going to come back again. And that, I think even before I ever had a special, was my reasoning to be like, let me always be like playing with something. And then as I played more, I wrote quicker. So it's not even as if, it's not even as if it's not hard to write a lot. It's just that the thing that gets me nervous now, the thing that I have the butterflies for, which is good, but it's like all the new stuff that I'm doing has like a little bit more. I think it would surprise people what I'm doing based on what I've done. And it's like my attempt at evolution, but it's also just things that are on my mind. And so then to your point, go in this different direction, but also have it be new. It's like there's always a little bit of fear there.
Another motivation to write is, of course, your own sense of I hate telling these jokes because I'm sick of them.
Yeah, you get sick of them whether you've recorded them or not. And if you have enough going on, this is not a diss on anyone who isn't writing a lot, but it's like if you have enough going on in your head about something, eventually you do want to get it out. And I feel like having a written joke is a way of getting it out. Like to your point about having the therapist, it's like I started working on a thing a while ago about how I only really want to take dating advice from lesbians. Because it's like they're the only ones who like get it. Like they get what I'm going through because they also date women, but they also are women. And if you don't finish that Punnett square and go straight across, you're getting bad advice. Because even I cannot tell you how many times I've been close to a woman, like a very good friend of mine, and then maybe this is like when I lived in Chicago, right? Close friend, I was telling her about some dating troubles I was having, and she cannot imagine being me, so she just plugged herself into what the other woman did, and right. I was like, you know me. How have you also turned on me now? I'm not even saying I was looking for a specific answer, but then just to what, to what Noam was saying, it's like you also can't go to like a single dude if you have a relationship problem.
That's
your home. You know what I mean? And so it's like having a lesbian is just a way to be like, all right, you are a woman, so you know how my girlfriend, might have felt, but you also date women, so you also know what women can be like to date. And so then that's the only like objectivity down the line that I think you can get as so, like a straight guy.
So if you were going to go to a therapist with the relationship issue, you'd have to go to a lesbian therapist.
Yeah, I would just take whatever my therapist said with a grain of salt and be like, bro, you don't know. I think personally, because therapy and finding the right person is so much like dating in a sense. Like a lot of people feel trapped, like they go to someone because their insurance takes them or whatever. And then they're like, well, this is my therapist. And if they kind of suck or they don't seem to listen or they clearly have their own.
Well, you might not know if they suck.
No, you know.
It takes a while.
Because it might take a while that they're doing something that you don't quite understand, but yet you'll feel better or you'll improve in the long term. But you can't necessarily analyze that straight away. How would you know?
Well,
if they're doing things or guiding you in a direction that you don't quite see.
Well,
not know immediately that they're helping.
It shouldn't be that, it shouldn't be that fucking mysterious, though.
Well, they go to school for, 9 years, so I assume, unless you're in accord with Noam that they really have no special expertise
in
anything.
No, I'm not in accord with Noam at all.
That's Noam's belief. Right. Therapy. But if they really are, they go to med school for 4 years, I guess, and then they go...
I don't think therapists go to med school for
psychiatrists.
Yeah, I'm not talking about a psychologist.
Well, my niece is, I think she went 4 years, and then a PhD takes another 2 years, whatever it is. It's like, it's a lot. So that you can't necessarily know what they're doing because...
You also need to vibe with a therapist.
Yeah, you gotta vibe. You gotta vibe.
That's the other reason, to be totally honest, and maybe I'm revealing a little bit too much here,
you already talked about your, the anal fissure a few episodes ago, so...
But I discovered very early on that I needed a gay guy for my therapist because I couldn't bear to walk into these offices that were just so heinous and poorly designed. Like, I couldn't take it that seriously if I walked into a space that just looked like it was like dusty and
Well, straight men can't get a gay guy to design their office?
Well, I mean...
Or that they just haven't been...
But also, you don't want somebody who might potentially try to sleep with you.
But do you think then, so this is I want to get your, opinion on this because of where you end up leaning towards, I want to get your opinion on this. I think that with good reason, but also I do believe it's happening. Like, not in an identity politics way, but just in a way that ends up being the way the world is. When you are dealing with people, it's petty, but we all have it. There's a certain aspect of us whether you are placed in this, Venn diagram of identities that doesn't like when the one this far away from me is right. And I'll admit to it, as a black person, sometimes I hate when white people just write.
Okay.
I'm just like, God damn. And you can hear it. You're like, oh. And they'll be right about something you wish they knew nothing about. Like if a white guy walked out and was like, this is what the black community needs to do to raise, just to raise their financial awareness and to have more money flowing through their community. And he's just right. And you can hear him being right.
Yeah.
He sounds right. There's still going to be a part of you. And some people let that part of them take over and don't want to listen, where they're like, I'm not going to listen to some white man about money and telling me what to do with my black money and whatever, right? And then I think that there's a thing even with obviously with men towards women, but also with women back to men, where it's like, I've watched it. It's like, I was raised by women, And it's like sometimes... Like, women just hate when a man is just right about something. And so it's more comfortable to get the exact same advice from someone who looks like you or someone who you don't feel threatened as if they're going to talk down to you. But it's the same advice. Like, anybody can yell fire in a building and they can be right. But the idea, I guess that's what I feel like, is that sometimes problems are so apparent and they're so urgent that I don't care who... is the person to sit me down and tell me.
Right now we hear a lot on social media, as a white man, as a straight man, as a cis man or whatever, stay out of the conversation. That we hear that a lot, right?
Now, yeah,
people
yeah.
say, well, you're not entitled to an opinion. You're not entitled to speak. You need to listen. That's sort of a overarching theme that we see now, I think. Would you agree, Perry Ella? We see that a lot?
Yes, I would agree that we see that a lot.
So I think what Josh is saying is that, well, we shouldn't think that way. If somebody's got an opinion, we should listen to it and judge it on its merits, which would seem to me the obvious.
I mean, it's that's my thing. Is like this is the reason I said the white-black thing, mm-hmm. right? Is I was having a conversation with a friend who something like this kind of happened, and they were annoyed. And I was like, but, and this is when I lived in Louisiana, and I was like, we are both poor. So a poor person is not going to come tell us how to make money.
Right.
We need a rich person, and we may not like who that rich person is, but as long as they're right, we will make money.
Right.
So at a certain point, you can't have this, like, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying, like at a certain point, I think it's becoming a thing culture-wide where instead of having more openness than the historical white man had towards women being right or people of color being right or worth listening to or having good points, we've actually expanded that point of view. And it's like, well, if a white man's not going to listen to a black woman, why should a black woman listen to a white man about anything? Because right. some of that talk of like, you're, you know, you need to listen, whatever. I think a lot of it does end up getting directed at people who don't know what they're talking about. And
of
just,
course,
and
but a lot of people, you know, there's people that don't know what they're talking about of all race, creeds, and colors.
Yeah,
a black
yeah.
man might not know what they're talking about a black issue, and a white man not, or a Jewish man might not know what he's or she is talking about a Jewish issue. But the idea that somebody should be, because they're not in the affected group, should just sit down and shut up. They should be sensitive and respectful and understand that it could get, that their opinion, you know, is coming from a certain place, but their opinion should be allowed. I should be allowed to express my opinion on reparations, for example.
I think
without being told, shut up and stay out of the conversation.
Yeah, I think that what ends up happening is when you are too close to something, it is actually harder to solve the problem. And every once in a while, the problem is solved by someone who does not have a fight in the, it, like they just,
right.
they're not in the game
and
at all.
Right. So it is true that you can get great advice from anyone, right? Like you might get great advice from, you know, somebody who you would think that fit the complete opposite profile of who you want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And I've certainly had that experience as well. But if you have to just, you know, throw darts and say, like, if I could pick anyone.
Yeah, sure.
Like, this is kind of the profile. And I've done that and I've been wrong, too.
We
right?
live in a world where we can hear a lot of opinions. You go on Twitter and I'm happy to hear anybody's opinion. If somebody has an opinion on anti-Semitism and, you know, you're not allowed to define anti-Semitism if you're not Jewish. No, I don't think that's true. I think you can't tell a black man what racism is. Well, again, I don't think that's true either. I can give my opinion. My opinion yeah. might be out of my ass and you're welcome to tell me that it is.
Because the thing that I think ends up happening more often than not, especially now that everybody can talk and everybody can talk to everybody, is that it would be like going to a couples therapist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a couples therapist will still not know the ins and outs. They won't know who's lying. They won't know who's embellishing. They'll just watch the dynamic of you two. You'll both say your piece and they'll offer up their best exercises to mediate, you know? But it would be like if you didn't like that therapist's advice, saying to them, well, you're not in this relationship.
Right, right.
So you don't get to, and it's like, but they're exactly who needs to say something and right. have an opinion and offer up solutions. So I just find that if there are fewer ideas, that I have no problem with people talking about how the spectrum of ideas can be 80%, 90% bad. I fully believe that. Everyone being allowed to talk and everyone not choosing to read is not a great thing.
Not a great
you know
thing.
I mean? But I do find that you end up getting more ideas in the same way that jokes work, where sometimes your friend says something and it is not even funny, but it gets your mind going towards a thing that is funny.
Right.
A funny thing came out of a not funny thing. A good idea can come sort of out of an idea that either doesn't work or a straight up bad idea.
But I think that in therapy, and I had a therapist that I was friends with, actually, a psychologist who I didn't see. And she told me this many years ago, and I never forgot it, that when you're going to therapy, you know, you're spending all this time and all this money and all this energy. In every session, you should have, like, at least one kind of aha moment, like something you should.
Well, if, this, I, should if that's spark. The way therapy works, it may not be the way therapy works. I don't, you know, I mean.
Well, I think the whole point or part of it is to get out of your head, right? Like we create these narratives.
I really don't know what's going on. I don't know what they're up to.
Like have you ever been to therapy?
Yes, and I don't know what. And yes, I
was
have.
It, was it talk therapy or was it?
Talk.
Yeah.
And how'd it go? How long did you go for, first of all?
I don't want to get into my therapy history, but I don't know if it worked or not. But, you know, I just assume that they're doing shit that I didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, I don't think that's
like
it.
A fucking mechanic is fiddling around in my car.
No.
And, I don't know what he's doing. Josh, I wasn't trying to keep it tight, but I did want to, I think it's put a nice bow on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about different people having, you know, opinions. And Chris Rock mentioned at the end of his set, spoiler, if you don't want to know what he said at the end of his set, then don't listen. But he said, well, he's been asked why he did not fight back against Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, because I have parents and they told me, don't fight in front of white people.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a common thing?
No, I've never heard that in my life, but I think that also it's part of the...
Is it shtick, or do you think that really is what he was taught?
I think that may be how he feels, and I'm sure that someone in his life maybe said something along those lines, but I still think it's mostly for the sake of the joke.
The reason the joke works is because it resonates with the audience.
Yeah.
The black people in the audience were laughing, and the white people too, and I assume it's because they're... They get it. I assume some of them have been told that, like, you behave yourself. As white people, we need to be on our best behavior and comport ourselves in a certain way.
Yeah, but I think that there's something to be said for, like, you don't not fight someone because white people are there. You don't fight someone because people are there. So I think that if it's a lesson he's trying to teach the audience, I think you just say people. If it's a joke he's trying to tell, I think that you say white people. Does that make sense? Because it's like it's
so you
like
don't think
this
that has
idea.
Any base. You don't think Chris really believes that you shouldn't fight in front of white people, or that played any role in his decision to just stand down.
I think when you look at his whole body of work, it makes sense that and it leads you to that joke. I think if you look at his actions that night, I think it leads more to like. In my opinion, let me not mess up my money or like I don't think that, you know, Will Smith smacked him and then he was like, I'd hit him. But Meryl Streep is here like that. That doesn't really resonate with me as much. And when I saw the joke, I just thought it's like, oh, funny way to end it. I didn't think like, oh, he's right. We shouldn't be fighting in front of white people or. You know, like, I think that caring about
Do you think
what,
any
you know,
good could have come of him? I mean...
Oh, hitting Will back?
Hitting Will back?
I don't necessarily
think
so.
If he could have dropped Will with one punch, that would have been something else.
It would have. And then he would have still had to bring up the nominee.
Can you imagine Will
like,
Smith...
Poor Questlove.
Can you imagine Will Smith is laid out on the stage and then Chris goes, now, where was I?
Yeah. It'd be a great moment for comedy. It'd be
and,
very
and Will
weird.
Just laid out, and Chris goes, "Okay, let's bring up our next person." And the dude is laid out,
in front
of him. I mean, that would have been kind of amazing. It wouldn't have happened because I don't think Chris is capable of laying out.
Yeah, I think
Will
when
Smith.
Someone's got like 80 pounds on you, you're not going to knock them out hard.
Chris made that point on in the special. Spoiler alert: that you know, he said, "You might not realize this, but Will Smith is significantly larger than me." You know, it may not come off that way on TV.
Yeah,
but he played Muhammad Ali.
Yeah,
and I didn't audition for that role.
Yeah.
Or maybe he said I played Pookie and Will didn't audition for that role. I don't. Whatever it was, it's one of those two. I'm cold in here. Is it me? Maybe my.
I mean, maybe you're not dressed warmly enough. You're wearing a.
I don't know. It's not. It's. I have a jacket.
Yeah,
on,
I have
so
a sweater.
It's not as cold
on.
To me.
In any case, Josh Johnson.
Josh Johnson, hey. Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
With Noam's favorite person, I'm quite fond of you.
I appreciate
as
it.
As well. I'm sorry I didn't recognize you.
No, it's not a big deal. I didn't take it personally. You were the 500th person
to recognize. Both blacks and white people.
Everybody is not recognizing me now.
Until you talk.
Yeah.
That's
then
so
Then I say it's
weird.
Josh, and they're like, oh. Yeah.
So his special is on Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I killing myself? Is that
up here?
Up here killing myself. Yeah. Why am I killing myself?
That would be a Jewish mother special.
is on Peacock streaming.
Yeah.
So thank you for being with us, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Will we be seeing you here more often because you're going back out on the road?
Yeah, I'm gonna be out for most of March, but then yeah, I plan to be
March Madness, everybody, as much as Josh Johnson. Perry L, of course, she's always with us, but we thank her. And Nicole Lyons behind the scenes. Thank you, Nicole.
Anytime.
We'll see you next time. And Noam will hear, maybe perhaps he'll have some interesting stories about his dinner with the Baroness.
And you can find us online. You're at Dan Natterman.
I'm at
Perry L. Ashenbrand. And Josh is at Josh Johnson.
Josh Johnson Comedy on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.